You're listening to the Clean Comedy Podcast with your host, James Creviston.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Clean Comedy Podcast. It's James. And today, I have a great guest. I got to work with this guy as I was hosting JR's Comedy Club out in Valencia, which I learned is also Santa Clarita, which is also like 18 other different cities apparently in one place. So I learned that at the time. But it was a great show. We had a fun time. I talked to a lot of people about that show. It was really funny because it was like Ken Garr was a headliner and this guy was the feature and I was hosting. And just kind of, it was a weird show for the first show. And the second show, he just like, it brought thunder that was just amazing. So please give it up for the very funny, the very talented David Rosenberg.
Hey,
welcome, welcome. So, do you remember that show? Like,
yeah, how... I remember all shows.
You remember all shows? I don't remember all shows. So good for you. That's you're way better.
I have a notebook that I really just use to write set lists in.
Yeah,
and which is dumb because I've never stuck to a set list. But I write my set list in and occasional jokes. And I think if I look back and like on a date, even if it's way in the past, I could probably look back because I always date them and I always put like where it is.
Right.
Like, oh, I remember that show. That was that show. That was blah, 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 blah. So I should generally be able to do that.
That's pretty awesome. I mean, I have all my set list for every show I do. And I also have a recording of every show that almost every show that I do.
That's really professional.
Yeah, and I date them where it was and whatever and stuff. But besides that, I don't, like, if you told me who else was on that show, what happened on that show, I would almost never be able to remember. The only reason I remember that show is because the night before I took my first improv class.
Then
we were waiting for you and Ken to show up. It was 7 o'clock. Show started 7:15. No one's there yet. Still, Paul and I talk. He's like, "All right, they're gonna be there in a little bit. Just go." Until Ken gets there and Ken tells you to get off the stage. Because you, I guess, had went to the other JR's comedy club.
Yeah, right? I went to the other JR's. I was so ashamed because, like, stand up, you have, like, two jobs, right? Like, just show up and don't get the show canceled, right? Like, that's it. Those are your two basic jobs. And if you don't manage to show up, you're like, oh god, I'm betting 50%. Like, well, betting 50% is actually good. Like, I'm getting an F at stand up comedy at this point. So that's all you have to do, right?
Yeah.
Especially as a feature. Like, I wasn't the headliner that night. I'm not the top name on the bill. People aren't coming to see me. I just happen to be there. So then I'm late. Dumb.
Do you know how much time I had to do before you got there?
No. How much time did you do?
I did 21 minutes.
Oh, good.
of just riffing, like, because I didn't know how long it was gonna be,
right?
I didn't want to like do a set and then, like, you know how, like, when you're at the end of a set, like, you know, you've like led yourself into that last joke and then now if you have to keep going, it's like, what do you do?
Yeah.
So I was like, I'm just gonna riff and improv with these people, and I did, and it was great. Actually, like, two bits came out of that.
Oh, that's riffing. Good.
So I was like, yeah, this is great. But
in like 18 years of comedy, I could name all the sets I've either missed or had to cancel or show up late for, because I really try never to do that. Like, yeah. I'm not late. I'm late in everything else in my life, much to my family's chagrin. But I once missed a show for a funeral, and I totally forgot about it, and I didn't write the guy, and I've never worked with that person again.
What? Wait, it was a show for a funeral? Like, you were performing at a funeral?
No, I had to go to a funeral instead.
Oh, okay.
I missed the show. And I was like, they stopped doing shows eventually. But there's another booker that, like, I once totally forgot that I had booked it. But that was like 2-3 years ago. It might have even been pre-COVID. But, like, I almost never, like, I'll get so frustrated. I'll go to, you know, a comedy club just to see if I can weasel time, because inevitably someone doesn't show up.
Yeah.
And I find that just, like, the one thing you're told you need in stand-up comedy is stage time. You need stage time. That's all you need. And so if you're booked by a comedy club and then you don't show up, it's like, what are you doing, right? Like, this is the bare minimum. This is all, the only way to get better at comedy is to do comedy.
Yep.
And I don't want to get into like the hardcore grinding debate, but the fact that people don't show up for club shows, I'm like, this is a club, right?
Yeah. Open mic is different, right? Sometimes you get burned out on open mics because you feel like I'm going to the same place, or I'm going there, nobody's listening, nobody's paying attention. Yeah. They're all in their own head, their own notes. I get that. But if you're booked on a show with paying customers and stuff, you got to be there. So,
yeah.
And I, you know, I'm just messing with you because you murdered when you got there. You killed that show. You like brought it, and then the second show, you just murdered the room. Thanks, and I was like, wow. So
I should have. Every time I don't tape, I regret it. And I didn't tape that. Well, the first show I definitely didn't tape because I was showing up late, right?
Right.
And then the second one, because that room can sometimes be more difficult for me because everyone's often so old, right? So they're so old and white. And that is not my ideal demographic, right? Like 70-year-old blue hairs is not exactly where I excel.
But they loved you. They loved you, though. That crowd loved you.
Oh, yeah,
I think
they were fun.
You did like a lot of Jewish jokes, and I think that somehow resonated with them a little bit.
Some of those people came to see me the next week.
Really?
Yeah, they came to see me the next week, and they bought shirts. So it was great.
Yeah, you're amazing. I mean, if you guys haven't seen David's stuff, go look at his Instagram and watch some of his stuff. But he destroyed this room on the second show. And I was like, man, he's hilarious. And then we talked between shows and talked at while the headliner was on and stuff. And literally, I was just impressed by how much you've done. I mean, you're like 13 years or so of comedy. 18 years. So
I'm impressed by how much I haven't done in 18 years.
No way, man. Netflix, iHeartRadio, SiriusXM, all like San Francisco Comedy Fest, like World Series of Comedy. World Series of Comedy is a big deal, dude. Like, that's
yeah,
big.
I did it a couple years ago. I stopped. It's a good festival and competition, and it can really help your career out. I stopped a couple years ago. I did the San Francisco. I used to do iHeartRadio a bunch. They would call me and I'd have to do some radio show in like New Jersey. And I would be acting on the radio show. And that was an odd moment. I did Playboy Radio once. I don't even remember who. But it was one of those things like they interviewed me and it was, I don't remember who set it up. All I remember like not filming it, like calling from my car in Nowheresville, Central Los Angeles. Like, okay, I guess I talk to Playboy Radio now. That's a weird moment in checklist. That's a weird moment in my checklist. So
it's good. So what? Where did you start stand up? How did you get started in stand up? Like, let's talk about your origin story.
I did two open mics in college, and I bombed horribly. No, I did well when I was 20. At an open mic in Boston. And then I bombed horribly when I was 21 at an open mic in Boston. And then I tried to be a real person. And then I moved to Los Angeles when I was 26. And then I took a comedy class. I took a class with Judy Carter and of the book Fame.
Yes, the Comedy Bible.
The Comedy Bible. I'm sure she's not the OG, but she's like the doyen of – everyone uses that book, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And then I will always be embarrassed by this. I took the class and then we had our graduation show at the Improv, and you got a physical VHS cassette, right? And I remember asking my friend who was a professional college comedian at the time, I was like, okay, this is great. Now do I send this off to Booker's? And now I look back and be like, oh God, I'm so ashamed that I even asked. Like, well, you know.
The problem is, though, no one tells you. They just say you need a tape to do these things, and they don't kind of give you like how much time you actually need and what you actually need to get there. They just go, you need a tape, and then you go, well, now I have a tape. I can do anything, right? But that's not how it works. And I think that's a lot of the bad parts of comedy classes. Like, I love comedy classes, but they only teach you enough to get you on stage. They don't teach you enough to make a career out of it or build a job out of it.
Well, I always find it entertaining that I missed the first half of the last class with Judy Carter. And that was after our performance. And I think that's when she talked about like, what do you do next? Right. Right. And I already knew, like, I was already going to open mics and stuff. And, you know, some of the other people did. I don't know. I mean, sometimes I think LA is a really toxic scene, and sometimes I think it's not toxic enough, and sometimes I think it's too toxic. I think there's a good sense of, okay, now you just go do comedy, right? You do it all the time. You do it every night. Like, it must have been hard for you to start while you're already married. And did you have kids when you started?
Yeah, yeah. I started at 35. Like, I actually started 9 months before my 35th birthday. And my wife is the one that, like, made me go do it. Like, because I was like, nah, I'm good. That's, like, we're good.
Unheard of.
Yeah. No, she's awesome. She's a saint. She's the one always that's always like, you should do this. You should do that. Keep going, doing these things. So that's why I've done comedy for so long. I also do improv. She also pushed me to learn to write for sketches and work on, like, I worked on a couple of TV shows and stuff. So she was like, do this thing, like, do the thing that you want to do. Cause I was a customer service manager for like a bunch of companies. I've been doing that. I'd managed other people. I'd been doing that thing. I hated it. Every day I would come home and be like, I hate this job. I do not want to do this. This is not what I went to school for. Like, I have a bachelor's in history, a master's in history, and a master's in business administration. I'm not an idiot. I should be able to do more than this, you know? Like, that's how I felt. I felt like I must be some kind of moron to have to work. No offense to anybody who works in a job like that.
No, I mean, look, most work is awful, and and yet it's what we need to do, right?
Yeah, yeah. And now I don't. Now my job, my living is writing jokes, writing scripts, writing commercials, doing stand-up, teaching podcasting, doing improv. Like, I literally get to do all the fun stuff every day and make money at it. And that's for me, that's the dream. Right, that's the dream. Now, the big dream is, obviously, Judd Apatow level, where I'm making movies and TV shows and doing stand-up here and there and whatever. That's the dream. I don't want Jerry Seinfeld, right? Like, I don't want to have to invest that much time into, like, sitcoms. I want to be able to go from project to project like Judd Apatow does. But, I mean, yeah, if you could get paid to do comedy for your living, I mean, that's the dream.
Yeah, you know? That's, in the beginning, we all want to be Seinfeld. And then after a couple of years, you go, yeah, I just want a living.
Yeah.
I mean, probably, you know, still, but... there's only, you know, there's a handful, but there's a lot of people who make a living at it in less glamorous fashions. Yeah, I've been doing it 18 years.
And let's go this. What's your favorite place you've ever performed, and what's the most unique place you've ever performed?
Can I just list my least favorite places?
Are you just going to say anywhere in Los Angeles?
I always say, like, I always think it's funny because I think Fresno is the greatest place I get to perform. I am there every couple months, and I've had one bad show in like 30 shows in Fresno because it's just regular people in a regular town. It's not jaded like LA. It's always good. I've always had a fun time in Fresno. I don't know. I mean, awesome. I can never really. I'm both self-centered and negative enough that I'll never really blame the venue for being that bad, right? Usually, if it's like a bad set, it was my fault, right? Like, I bombed for 35 minutes in Coos Bay, Oregon, but that was my fault.
Right.
I'm trying to think where else was atrocious that I did.
That's funny. So why did you bomb for 35 minutes? Was it just material? Was it just you weren't feeling it? Or what was the – what do you blame for that?
It was a triple run back when there were a thing, which was a run up the Northwest, right? And I'd done that room before, and I was feeling cocky, and I put the run together. I brought my friend as the headliner, and I was just going to feature. I never headlined before, and I was like – but I was like, I'm going to go long so you don't have to do all your time. I'm going to go long. And so for 35 minutes – I bombed to the point that people were giving me like rude hand gestures, and I felt so bad. I think that was just one of those. I was probably 6 years in. I think it was one of those, like, you comedy's just a con game. It's just confidence.
Yeah.
And then once especially back then, once you lose confidence in a set, it's really hard to get it back. Right. It's, you know, once you feel yourself falling, it's really easy when you're newer to just keep falling. Right. As well to climb back up. I think that's what it was. I don't know. That was a long time ago. I mean, I have a lot of bombs that I did a banquet hall in Whittier.
Okay.
I did a banquet hall in Whittier a bunch of years ago that I bombed at. It was enormous. So, and I do mostly crowd work, so it was really enormous. And so there was only the people in front of me that I could really see, and then everyone else, and the people in front of me didn't like me, so then I had nothing to play with, and then I just had 300 other people who disliked me. Oh, it was rough. That was a rough night. But I don't think I would ever say, like, this, that was the worst place I ever played. I remember one open mic / book thing when I first started out. It was like you at the end of a bar, and then the bar went off that way, and right in front of you, like 4 feet away, was a mirror. Right? it was the worst setup you could possibly have. And I didn't have the wherewithal, or none of us did, to be like, I'll just turn this way and face the bar. That was dumb, but I don't know. I've never said no to a show, or almost never said no to a show. So it's kind of what you go through.
And you've have you done anything outside of the US? Have you ever done like shows outside of the US?
It doesn't really count. I've done Hawaii a couple times. I mean, it doesn't count as outside of the US, but
right.
Yeah, but I've been to Hawaii a bunch of times, I guess, to do comedy. And that's the only, I'm supposed to go to Mexico in December.
Really?
Do a run to Mexico. I think I'm doing 3 days as opposed to 10. I'm excited because someone like 10 years ago tipped me pesos. At a show in San Diego, and I've always held on there in my wallet, like four wallets later, it's probably like 10 years. I've held on to them so that I can finally spend my pesos. I don't even talk to the booker anymore, but I'm gonna spend those pesos.
That's awesome. That's actually pretty awesome. I would love to do that. My goal, I want to be able to go to Australia because I know some people in Australia, and I know that it would go pretty well there. And then I would like to probably go do like the UK or the Edinburgh Festival and stuff like that. So
yeah, I don't really need to do Edinburgh because it's so much producing and hassle and getting people into your show. I don't need that. Like, I don't like doing that in the US. I don't want it in my town. I don't have to organize that from here to 10 time zones away or whatever it is next.
Yeah. No, it sounds like a good time. Like just to do once, dude, just to do it, try it and stuff like that.
People love it. You do it once, you get, I've seen people get better because you just do, you're doing like 60 minutes a night for 30 days. You're doing way more time than most people when they do that are even used to doing. So you're leveling up, but it also, you know, it almost kills you.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. I think it would be awesome. I would just want to do it. It's like one thing that's on my list of things to do. Also, if I ever get famous enough is to host SNL. That's the only other like big thing I ever want to do. I don't want to like be on SNL. I don't want to like write on SNL. I just want to go do one show and know what that experience is like, because I've been listening to, not that you should plug other podcasts, but I've been listening to Fly on the Wall podcast with Dana Carvey and David, what is his name? Him and David Spade. Thank you. And they've been interviewing so many people. And their first one was like Chris Rock. And then they just, you know, I listened to like Cheryl Terry. And then they had two with Lauren Michaels. And it was just like a very interesting look behind the curtain of SNL. So
yeah, those are the years that I grew up on. I grew up on the Dana Carvey years for SNL, right? That early Church 90s heyday.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think about it, and I think, you know, how different comedy is. Well, then what's funny is Kenan Thompson is now on SNL, and he's been on there for a while. And I remember being a kid watching all that on Nickelodeon when he was on Nickelodeon's like Up All Night thing or whatever. Yeah. So they had like that. So I like my journey is like I saw Kenan when he started, and now Kenan in his later years on SNL, and it's just amazing to see the guy is just a monster. Like that's one of my dream interviews too is Kenan from SNL, and well, I would say all that when I would talk to him. He'd be like, I'm on SNL now, James. Like, listen up. So
it's like I once met many years ago in college, I met Helen Hunt, and I complimented her, and she'd probably just done as good as it gets. And I was like, I loved you in Quarterback Princess. It was like, you know, like a dumb 80s movie, like an 80s rom com from 84.
Yeah. Sometimes when you know like the little things about somebody, it really shows like you care, you appreciate what they've
accomplished. Or you can like get a funny laugh because you'll be like, they'll be like, oh man, I can't believe you saw that. I mean, I actually never, I've generally done a hands-off in my time in LA of like, the only comic I ever really would have wanted to meet would be, would have been Robin Williams, because that's what I really grew up idolizing. And then he passed away. And then I would like to meet Bobcat, because I also watched him when I was like 8, right? That's it. That's about it, right?
Yeah.
I love Bobcat. And I'm sad that I've never done a show with him, because he goes in and out of like doing a lot of stand-up, and then he directs a lot now. So that's about it.
That's pretty awesome. That would be a good one. I'd like to meet Jerry Seinfeld and Chris Rock. Those are like the two people that have like really influenced me. Probably Steve Martin too. If I had the opportunity, Steve Martin would be awesome for me to meet. But other than that, it's like I've met a ton of comedians and been like really grateful, thankful for their time. Like I met Joe Rogan like 3 different times, and like one of them was at a Rite Aid. Like it was like super random.
I mean, super random. That is in Los Angeles, right? You don't meet Tom Cruise, but I have John Cryer's frisbee for the past 18 years.
Right.
You could play in the frisbee game I played in. So I remember someone tried to give him a script one time, and it was just a sense of like, no, you don't do that here. Like, you can talk shop, but not like really like press hard.
No.
But yeah, we still have his frisbee.
That's awesome. So what is it, like, if you had to go back in time and start comedy over, like you had to start over from scratch, what would be like the biggest piece of advice you'd go back and give yourself?
I think I told you I have a lot of things of what not to do. I was told don't show yourself until you're ready. Like, right. The worst thing you can do is showcase at like a club and bomb when you're too new. I think I took that way too much to heart. And so I think also hiding for too long is detrimental. I've seen some people get really good going through, like I think if you're a straight white dude, or now a black dude, or a lady, even the best incubator of comics in LA these days is the Stored. It wasn't for a long time. For the long time, I would guess it was pretty toxic. But yeah, if you're a 24-year-old dude or whatever, and you want to do comedy, go work at the Comedy Store. I also think, I do shows in the greater SoCal region, and I always think it's best to get good in a small market. Like I go to San Diego a lot, and I think those people have it perfect, because there's like 5 clubs, but a lot of independent shows. There's don't tell shows. There's like a lot of stage time, but without all of the pressure, and there's money, right? You can get paid in San Diego, much easier to get paid in Los Angeles. And the audiences are so much better.
Yeah.
Right.
I wish I would start in San Diego. I was in the Navy in San Diego, and I saw like Gary Owen, who started stand up in the Navy. Like he won and he started in San Diego. And then I was like, man, I would love to do that. And I just like kind of glossed over it during my time. I wish I would have. But now, I see a ton of shows in San Diego. And I was like, Madhouse was there when I was there. And I was like, never went
there. I was there at the end of November. There were every couple months. I was in Oceanside last night.
Is there a club in Oceanside, or is there just shows?
The Grand is not in Oceanside, but there's a couple of independent shows in Oceanside. But they're all arguably better than just about anything in Los Angeles.
Right.
Like Los Angeles proper. Like even doing some of the big club shows, the audiences are so weird. Right? LA audiences can be so weird. Like Santa Clarita, where we did, is good, a little old, but like good. But the stage time down in San Diego is almost always better. Like I've walked into shows in East County, San Diego, and be like, oh yeah, this looks like a Klan rally, and then have it turn out to be like the best show that month. Because they're just fun, and I don't do any politics, so I don't have to worry about anything, right?
Yeah.
So I'm not going to step on any third rails. They're just regular people, and whatever that's worth, it's always a better audience.
Yeah.
So that is one advice, would be to start somewhere else. And then, though I've also, I also give people this, I also tell people that don't move to LA until LA says to move to LA. Cause I've seen a lot of people, LA looks at you as you are when you hit LA. So if you start as an open micer in LA, it's really hard to shed that label. And if you start, but if you come in as a road headliner, then that's what you're known as. But if you're, I've seen people who come in from the road to LA and then they keep having to go back to the road, back where they're from. It, it just makes it harder. So, another bit of advice. Does that count?
Yeah, no, that's great. That's great advice. And I've heard the same thing. I've heard kind of like, you know, if you could start in the Bay Area, that'd be great. Or if you could start in San Diego, that'd be great if you're in California. If you're not, start somewhere else. Go to Chicago if you want to go to like a mid-level kind of big city, but not too big like New York or LA or Boston or Philly. Like they have good places too. So it's good. And then a lot of people also say, you know, some of those big places in the Midwest, St. Louis and stuff like that.
Yeah, I mean,
Kansas City, you'll do well, you know?
Yeah. And it also really depends what you're looking to do.
Right.
In stand up. Like LA is just about the industry. So if you want to get on TV, this is where you want to be, or New York and a little Chicago. But you can have a road career from Milwaukee. You can have a road career from Chicago or Indianapolis. You can do cruises from wherever you want. I the one thing I admonish people is you should start somewhere where there's enough time. You need time. We started with that. And you need time more than anything else. You just need stage time. So, you know, Vegas, one of those towns that has a lot of open mics and shows where you have time to go and figure out who you are and how to be funny on stage and to build your confidence. That's all you need. And like, I go to Fresno and I have friends and some of them are like, a guy wrote me and he was like, what do you think about blah, blah, blah. And I was like, you got to go to San Diego or San Francisco.
Yeah.
Choose one of those two. They're the closest smaller markets because you're not going to get enough time in a smaller place to get really good.
Yeah.
Unless you really hustle and you're also creating your own stuff. You can get good in San Diego without ever creating your own show. Right.
Yeah.
So
that's awesome. Well, now that you've done it for so long, what is your goal? What is the big thing that you want? What do you want to do? Like, what if someone came to you and said, you know, magic fairy, let's say, came and said, David, I can give you the one thing that you want. What's the one thing that you want to accomplish in your career next?
Well, for years, I'd aimed to be a warm-up guy because as a person who does a lot of crowd work, that seemed like a good venue. But that has changed drastically with the demise of sitcoms.
Yep.
They really make very few multicams now, and there's not as much smaller talky shows. There's like, there's no At Midnight. E isn't producing a lot of live shows as they used to, right?
Yep.
There are a lot of comedians live shows, and that has largely stopped. It'll probably come back in some way, shape, or form because everything Hollywood's very cyclical.
Yep.
Now with a family, I've tried to transition into writing. I'd really like to maybe sell one of my cartoons or work on someone else's and just do that. And then just do stand up whenever I wanted and someone wanted me to. Like, I love driving to Fresno, but I probably would do it less.
Yeah. That's a good one. So you would like to do like animation. Animation is your like dream thing.
I mean, now. Yeah. Because I'd be around, and I'd be around for my kids and the wife, and I'd be funny. I mean, that would be ideal. And it's not, you know, I love stand-up. I don't think anything beats it. But I'll see guys with, like, serious road careers. And on the one hand, I'll be jealous of how much they're on the road, and the other hand, I'm like, you don't see anyone. Like stand-up is a very lonely pursuit. It's a single man's or single woman's pursuit. And it, once you have a family, it makes it much harder to be like, okay, I'm going to, you know, I'm going to be in Western Kentucky and then I'm going to be in Central Kentucky and then I'm going to be in Eastern Tennessee. And
you can string it together and you sell your merch, you can make good money, but you're basically living out of a car or airports.
Yeah. So. Yeah. I agree with that. That's why I like to be able to, that I can keep my freelance writing stuff and do all the other things that I do through the podcast. I'm hoping that when my kids go to, when they're out of high school and go to college, that'll be a time where I can go, my wife and I can get an RV and just, that's how I do stand up, is I just travel from place to place to place and do my stuff. And then we're hanging out still. We still get to hang out. We still get to do whatever and live an awesome life. See America, go to all the baseball stadiums. That's like my, on my bucket list. Really? I want to go to every single baseball stadium in the United States and watch a game. That's like, I know it's a stupid, weird goal, but like,
no,
it's also, I love baseball.
It's like an older dad goal.
I guess I'm old dad.
I know a friend's dads who did that. Like, I don't know. I've been to a bunch. I'm going to get a hot dog wherever I go. So I'd be okay with it just because Dodger dogs are gross. They're the grossest hot dogs I've ever had. I don't care if no one respects me in Los Angeles for saying that they're disgusting hot dogs.
Well, okay. So now it depends on whether you get the boiled one or the grilled one. So if you get a grilled...
I can't believe grilling would even make it that much better.
It does make it better, I promise.
The only way it was good is when they used to serve them as corn dogs, and then you're basically eating the corny stuff and you don't notice how bad the hot dog is. But I don't even see that anymore.
And also there's a new vendor. So Dodger dogs are not made by the old vendor anymore, it's made by a new vendor.
Dodger dogs used to be, they were in Johnsonville. They were somewhere. Yeah. They're like Oscar
Mayer. Farmer John's.
They're Farmer John's. They're like the worst of the hot dogs. But that's what Dodger Dogs is. But so then they discontinued with Farmer John, but they found a new vendor who promised to make it just like. So it's like, you got a new vendor to make bad hot dogs? That doesn't make any sense.
This one needs to be a bit for you, like about Dodger Dogs, because that's something
I would do it in Los Angeles, and people would beat me up afterwards.
And then I'd do it in San Francisco.
I never really cared for Vin Scully as well, and then I'd never perform in this town again. I don't know if you
make it out of the venue at that point. If you start going on Vin Scully, I don't know how far you're gonna make it.
You guys just like him because he was there for 70 years.
Well, his voice is like soothing when you're listening to baseball. Like, it is soothing.
It's not as bad as that awful guy in New York who came up with A-Rods. And like, there's been like books written about how annoying it is, but it's made him a knowable. Of course, I don't remember his name.
Right. That's so funny. I mean, listen, I know plenty of people who are not big fans of Dodger Dogs. I 100% get it.
I love hot dogs.
Same. I'm also not a big hot dog guy either. But going to a Dodger game is just part of like what you do. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So it's good. It's like when you go to, like, I went to the Cubs stadium before they put in lighting. So they used to only be able to do day games.
I remember that.
So I went the season before because they were announcing they were going to put in lights and stuff. And it was like being in the 1950s watching baseball and then just eating Chicago pizza and Chicago dogs and stuff. And it was just like a great time. Like, it was awesome.
I like a Chicago dog. It's fine. I also had Chicago deep dish and I was like, this is lasagna. It's fine.
Well, have you had Detroit pizza? Detroit pizza is a good combination.
You guys talk about Detroit pizza. Detroit pizza is just like lunch, like school lunch pizza. It's just a sheet pan pizza.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I'm going to bring you out to where I live and we'll have Detroit where I live. It's good. It's really good.
Fantastic. I'm so excited to have the pizza of like a third grade elementary school in Mancino. My family, my wife and kids are really, you're just going to bring me into like the local Agora Hills junior high. My family is very snooty about pizza. I'm not as snooty, but.
Really?
My wife and kids are very particular about pizza. That's hilarious. I like good pizza.
Yeah. Now, sorry for everybody, this turned to a food, like a food show. Okay. I don't know what happened there. It is what it is. But. That's part of, as you become a comedian, as you travel around, you're going to try different things. You're going to see different things and you're going to find the world.
Oh, yeah. I used to rate shows by like what food they either serve there. I'll do any show in Oceanside because there's a barbecue in Southern place called That Boy Good, because I'll go to That Boy Good beforehand.
Really? I've never been down there. I got to go to, I used to live in Oceanside for a little bit. And there was a pizza place on the main drive in Oceanside, like right before you go on the beach. And I would work there. I knew the family and I worked there and stuff. And so
I love Oceanside because of that Boy Good. I did a show there last night. I walked through a night market, like, you know, they were selling like tchotchkes and like there was like vendors and heroes and gyros and whatever. And I was like, it's still not going to be better than the ribs. So I just went and got my ribs.
That's awesome. I'm going to have to go there. That sounds awesome because I love good barbecue. There's not a lot of good barbecue places in the LA area. Sorry.
There's more and there's more pop-ups. And actually there's going to be a competing one. There's Heritage Barbecue. And they're opening up in Oceanside as well. So even more reason to do shows in Oceanside. And there's a couple of shows in Oceanside.
Well, I'm going to have to get booked on some shows in Oceanside, I guess. I got to better start looking. Mm-hmm. Hey, if you're in Oceanside and you're booking shows, hit me up. Like, let me know. Hey,
and if you go to Petco Park, they have a Phil's Ribs in Petco.
Petco is the – listen, okay. I am a Dodger fan. I love the Dodgers. Petco Park is the best stadium I've ever been to in Major League Baseball.
I mean, I guess I only agree because there's a Phil's there and Phil's ribs are so good.
But they have everything there. Like literally anything you could want to eat, they have in that stadium. And the stadium's just so cool.
Yeah, the stadium was pretty cool. I went there. Yeah. I think we saw either a Padres Phillies or a Padres Mets game a bunch of years ago before the Padres kicked my Mets out of the playoffs this year.
Oh, that's why you have a negative outlook on things. You're a Mets fan. You have to be. You can't ever be positive as a Mets fan.
No, it's not just that. Look, it's not like we're like it's not like I'm from Detroit, right?
Oh wow, Shane.
You know, one of those, like, I don't even understand why the Pirates still exist, but I grew up in Bethlehem. We won in 86, that was last year.
It's all good. I'm just messing with you. Look, I grew up as a Texas Rangers fan in Texas. I went to go games when Nolan Ryan was there, but I also watched a lot of games, you know, back in the day when, you know, Frank Thomas would come and play from Chicago. Yep. And you know, like all the guys when the Oakland A's were actually like a good team with Canseco and like all that stuff. Like Royals came to play and Bo Jackson was there. Like I was excited as a kid. Like it was, there were things that that genre, that era of like baseball is like what probably made me be a huge baseball fan. It's just like, man, like everybody was amazing then.
And whatchamacallit, the Rangers were never good.
They were never like good. They were like never great. Yeah, but they had like a great, you know, Nolan Ryan was a great pitcher when they were there. And, you know, Oil Can Boyd was like a great pitcher that they had for a while. Like they had some great people, but they like never could get over the hump. Yeah. Like they couldn't do it, but that was my team. Like I grew up in Texas. I love watching games. It was just amazing. And now that I think they're like on their third stadium is what someone told me, like they built a third Rangers. I'm like, how many do you need?
Look, if you can, I mean, they tricked the voters into giving them another stadium. Like, okay, I guess we give the Rangers another stadium.
Well, I think they're giving the, Chargers a stadium in like Woodland Hills area or something like that. Aren't they tearing down the mall to build a stadium or something over there? Is what I heard.
So much sense for the 9 Chargers fan that live in.
Well, Agoura Hills is their like their headquarters is in Agoura Hills. So I think that's probably why.
Oh.
And they're not going to get to build it out here anywhere. Like there's no room. What are you going to do? Build it in the mountains on the way to Malibu?
We were in downtown LA the other day, and it was there's all sorts of empty, weird space and like leftover, you know, mills from the 1930s or whatever, right? That are now either lofts or like high end Italian restaurants. Like they could take. Like you drive on the 5 or the 10, and you look over, and you're like, "What is all that empty? All the shipping containers, as far as the eye can see."
That's true. Well, David, what is like? What would you like to leave people with? What would you like to talk about?
Did we talk enough about comedy? Do you need to know more about comedy?
We talked about everything. There was a lot. It was good. I enjoyed it. Well, do you have something in comedy that you want to talk about? Something that like is like your passion in comedy? No. Oh, what is your favorite animated series? Because you said you love animation, you want to do animation stuff. What's your favorite animated series? That's a good one. So I like that.
I watch a lot. I watch kids and adult animation.
Same.
I'm every year they come out with the accepted list of like accepted scripts for you should spec, and some of them I'll be too intimidated, right? I wrote a Bob's Burgers, because Bob's Burgers is very positively formulaic. And the characters are very well defined. So you know what they're going to do, right?
Right.
And
Big City Greens. It's a kid's show. Really good. It's also very formulaic, but the characters are very well defined. Both of them actually are kind of positive. I like both of those, but like some of the other shows, like it was like you could write a Rick and Morty. I was like, it's way above my like pay grade as far as I love Rick and Morty.
Agreed.
But it's so complex and it has so much emotional heft, right? Yeah. There's so much at stake. You know, there's so much going on with that family. I watch Solar Opposites too. I grew up on The Simpsons and Ren and Stimpy. I was never a huge Beavis and Butthead fan.
I am a huge Beavis and Butthead fan. Like, I do the voices and stuff. I have always wanted to, like, get Mike Judge to, like, talk to Mike Judge because he, like, ultimately changed my entire life with, like, how I viewed what comedy could be because I'd never seen comedy like that in my life. I watched Frog Baseball in my grandma's – my grandma worked at JCPenney's. They had, like, a break room. I watched Frog Baseball on this, like, little TV in the corner, and I was, like, dying laughing. Like, I can't believe somebody was able to make this. Like, they let somebody put this on TV. Are you kidding me? You know?
I actually fell into being, like – in group situations, I'll often end up being like Beavis. just like this ridiculous wild card. Beavis is like, he's the same persona as Shake, Master Shake.
Yes.
On Aqua Teen. I love Aqua Teen.
Do they make him anymore? Do they make Aqua Teen?
No, they just,
yeah, I was going to say. I used to love that show. We used to watch the show.
I love that show. And then I think I read something about it, and they were like, we'd write a script, and the actors would come in, and they would just riff on it, and so then we would just animate that, because if you watch that show, it mostly throws narrative out the window, right?
Yeah. Where,
you know, you're supposed to do a circle, right? At the beginning, you're supposed to, you know, go from the beginning and, you know, you end up in the beginning again. Nothing. Like, you'll be like, what happened to that plot line? Not done.
Yeah.
That show. Octane was the best.
Yeah, there's not a lot of shows that are like that anymore. I would love to write for The Simpsons. I'm not of the right caliber of writer. You have to be from Harvard, be part of the Harvard Lampoon. I'm not even close. And no, but I would love to do that. The Simpsons would be awesome. But Mike Judge, like, literally changed my. I could do, you know, Hank Hill. I could do I do all the voices because that guy inspired me so much. I'd be like, hey, what's going on out here?
That's good.
Yeah, you want to buy some propane and propane accessories?
That's good. I never watched those. Those weren't my jam. I watched Family Guy for a long time.
Yeah.
I only watched
that every now and then. Family Guy, every now and then I'll watch it.
I really liked Family Guy. I really liked Futurama was my jam.
Futurama was probably the best, and sad that it just did not keep going because I think – no offense, I love The Simpsons, but I think Futurama was like the next step up from that. There was so much that they could do and did do with it that was just like so good.
Yeah, I still watch South Park, and it's also on the accepted list. And you're like, I couldn't write it because they do it something that happened last week in the news, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And then second of all, the way they weave together plot lines is so impressive, but also their characters are so well put together.
Yeah.
And so, to use the cliche, in some of those shows, they really write themselves, some of the characters, right?
Yeah.
You know what Randy's going to say, right? You know what? That's the same thing on Bob's Burgers. You know what someone is going to say, or what types of things they say.
Yeah. And that's the key. That's the key to a good animated series or a good sitcom or anything. Is like, if you know what the characters are gonna believe or gonna do, then you have a good way out of it. Like the script that got me some attention and got me a web series to write on was a Brooklyn Nine-Nine spec script. I wrote that script because I knew all the characters. I knew I'd watched enough of the show. I knew what every character was gonna do, how they would behave in those situations, how it would go. Yeah, and it was like, okay, I could do it.
You throw a rat into the middle of the room, and you know how everyone in the room is going to respond to this dead rat being in the room.
Exactly.
There was another one on the list, and I watched a couple, and I was like, "These, I don't understand why this is on the accepted list because it's not. People aren't that well defined."
Right? Do you know what show it was?
I don't want to say. It's discontinued.
Oh, okay. Yeah. But, so, Do you have like an animated like script that you wrote, like a pilot or something like that you wrote?
Yeah,
for
I have a bunch. I have a sitcom pilot, not sitcom, but you know, like a 22-minute, and I have a bunch of 11 minutes and a bunch that are quicker. I don't have anything because now it's shifted and so much of it is online, right? Yeah. You know, it's on you on like TikTok or Instagram, and they're like 29 seconds or 37 seconds, and that's like a different. It's still the same, but it's still a much quicker animal.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I don't have one of those, which is what I really should do next.
That is, and you can get someone to animate it and make something out of it too, if you wanted to, you know.
I really should have pushed harder to get boards a bunch of years ago made of one of my scripts so I could, because execs don't want to read a script. They just want to look at boards. Right.
Yeah.
I should have, but I didn't, but oh well.
So there you go. There are your goals, animation. So if you guys want have animation, you need someone to write, David's there. He's got scripts.
There's lots of scripts to show you.
There you go.
Some of them I'm even proud of a little.
That's how you got to be. Well, David, thank you for being on the podcast. Is there anything else you want to promote? Anything you want to shout out, your social, shout out where people can find you?
Oh yeah, you can find me. So on social media, on TikTok. So I love guinea pigs because they're the best things in the world. So on Instagram, I'm at Rosie Pigs, RosiePigs. And that's also my Twitter handle. But Twitter, I use just to troll conservative celebrities. So don't check out my Twitter. It doesn't do any good. It's just like releasing anger. And on TikTok, a pug named Rosie and her guinea pig friends had Rosie Pigs. So on there, I'm Rosie Piggies.
Oh, okay. And I'll put a link to your website and everything in the show notes as well.
Oh, yeah, so and I have a website.
There you go. And yeah, that one's davidrosenbergcomedy.com. So if you guys want to go on together, but it'll be in the show notes as well. So thank you so much, David. Thanks for being on the podcast. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Have a good one. We'll talk to you soon. Bye.